take the roll call. Trustee Corsini. Trustee Carji. Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Conti. Trustee Hennig.
Here.
Trustee Gibbs.
Here.
President Odusi.
Here. If I can ask all of you to say the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay. Mike, we already got the sign-in, so. We already got the sign-in, so.
Okay. Good deal.
Okay, so we have for fire suppression. Okay, we got Pete and John. If you wouldn't mind, when we get to that point in the, which will be soon, then I'll have you come up and speak on behalf of your subject. Is that okay? Okay, very good. All right. Then, moving on, we've got the consent agenda. So if I can ask a trustee to please move to approve the consent agenda A through T.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
A through T?
A through T.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Second, okay. Is there any questions, comments regarding the consent agenda? Hearing none, I will ask for the clerk to please take the vote.
Maybe read it.
You can read it. Before you vote.
Thank you.
A, regular village board meeting minutes, August 20th, 2018. The executive session meeting minutes of August 20th, 2018. C, proclamation National Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. D, change order number one, final 2018 curb and sidewalk program for $8,658.12 resolution. E, change order number one, final 2018 Chicago Avenue water main project for $9,006.41 resolution. F, award of bidding contract for Gale Street Alley project to Atlanta Concrete Contractors Inc. for $203,167.75. G, waiver of formal bid due to competitive quotation and award of contract for street lighting electricity with AEP Energy Inc. at a rate of 3.1 cents per kilowatt hour. H, waiver of formal bid due to competitive quotation and award of contract for pump station electricity with MC2 Energy Inc. at a rate of 6.1 cents per kilowatt hour. I, right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for an irrigation system located at 400 Ashland Avenue. J, right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for an irrigation system located at 554 Forest. K, right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for an irrigation system located at 316 Lathrop. L, recommendation of the Sustainability Commission regarding opposition to local preemption for federal pesticide legislation. M, monthly department reports. N, monthly performance measurement report. O, monthly financial report, August 2018. P, accounts payable, August 2018, $1,834,151.94. Q, village administrator's report. R, waiver for formal bid and purchase of a 2019 Ford Explorer through Curry Motors fleet through the Suburban Purchasing Cooperative for $27,233. S, amendment to the mutual aid agreement for the Northern Illinois Police Alarm System, NIPAS, resolution. T, change order number one, final 2018 pavement crack ceiling for $71.42 resolution.
Thank you. Now, if you could please take the vote.
Trustee Carji.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Conti.
Yes.
Trustee Hennig.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Motion passed. Very good, thank you. So moving on to item four, which is our consent items for separate consideration.
I'll make a motion to approve accounts payable from the Economic Development Fund, $695.13, Madison Street TIF Fund, $1,083.91, North Avenue TIF Fund, $5,406.64.
Second. Thank you. Wait, your second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion questions regarding item 4A?
At this time, I would like to recuse myself since my law firm represents District 90 and District 200. And due to the common law conflict of interest, I'm going to ask the clerk not to call me for the vote.
Thank you. And ask the clerk, please take the vote.
Trustee Hennig?
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs?
Yes.
Trustee Carjee?
Yes.
Trustee Conte?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so we're on to item 5, which is recommendations of boards, commissions, and committees, and there are no unfinished business, so on to item 7, which is new business. And item A, if I can get a trustee to please move item 7A in a second.
Make a motion to pass an ordinance approving a redevelopment agreement for the 7756 Madison Street Skin Care Company Spa Salon Development, comprising a part of the Madison Street TIF District of the Village of River Forest, Illinois.
Can I get a second, please?
Second.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to ask Administrator Palm to give us an update on this.
Right. So consistent from our discussion at the last board meeting, we talked about providing incentive agreements for the 7756 Madison Street retail area, and in part using Madison Street TIF dollars to help facilitate that. The tenants that we're looking to, they're looking to utilize that space, our current tenants, and something that we'll talk about later this evening, in the Lake and Lathrop development area. So based on your direction at the last meeting, staff in concert with the village attorney put together the attached incentive agreement that you have in your packet this evening. The owner of the skincare company sought proposals for the build-out cost. Ms. Capizzi is here this evening if you have any specific questions. The low bid was $72,500, of which the village will fund half of that, or $36,250. It's important to point out that the incentive will be paid out over a three-year period. So we talked at the last meeting about clawback provisions and things of that nature. When you're in lease relationships, it becomes a little bit more difficult to claw money back unless you actually were to file suit, for example, because there's not a lot of collateral to post in order to protect the village's interest. So the idea is you don't want to give someone some money and then they go out of business a month later, right? And so what we've done is we've spaced those payments out over 3 years so that the village is reasonably secure that we will see our dollars to fruition. In the event the owner does not, for whatever reason, we're staying in business over that three-year period, we would not then pay out the rest of those funds. The EDC has also reviewed this. They just suggested that we take a look at some additional financials of the business. And so actually before you tonight, what I've given you on a separate piece of paper in front of you is just a further revision that the village attorney provided to me today that just adds some additional language that the village would then put into that agreement to allow us to go ahead and do that. Again, that was a recommendation of the EDC. And then the other thing I would point out too is a benefit that we talked about briefly at the last meeting is the property tax component. So right now, this property is assessed significantly less because of all the vacancies. This property, or this tenant, excuse me, will go ahead and take up three of those spaces. So that will take a big bite out of that reduction in assessed valuation to the point where I feel comfortable saying that our return on our investment will be less than 5 years for the amount of money we're putting forward. And I believe that is it. And then one last point, we still are working with two other owners over at Lake and Lathrop, Allstate Insurance and In-N-Out Fitness as well. So I suspect at future meetings to bring subsequent agreements back for your consideration.
Thank you. And I want to remind the board that these are the three businesses, especially Sandra from Skincare, who came to us and said they really wanted to stay in Rural Forest as a business. And I don't know if anybody has gone to her business, but it's a phenomenal one, and she's got a great following from the River Forest residents. So we are very happy that you're part of our community, Sandra, and so we want to keep you. And this was one of the ways to help you as a small business owner. So, and I think, so the board acknowledges that early on. So, any questions from any of the trustees about?
Do we have any commitments from the landlord of the strip mall to improve the property, given that the village is paying to relocate a tenant to his property?
In terms of the overall building, the tenant, the owner has actually recently undertaken painting of the building, some improved signage, landscaping, the parking lot, things like that. So those are things he's all done on his own.
And could I ask how many bids were solicited and received?
Two.
I do have a couple of questions, ma'am, if you wouldn't mind coming up to the...
Center?
Well, I'll be nice, I promise.
Now, don't comment on those.
My first question is, did your current landlord at Lake and Lathrop, did they reach out to you about relocation? Have they discussed that at all with you?
No.
And I've heard a rumor, and I don't know if it's true or not, I called you today to try and find out, but I guess you weren't open, that they've indicated to you they're not going to return your security deposit. Is that true?
Say that again?
I've heard, someone told me, and so I want to confirm that, but that you were told that you weren't going to get your security deposit back from the building at Lake and Lathrop.
Oh, it's not that I was told. There was just a rumor that someone else did not receive their security deposit back.
Okay, so you haven't...
I haven't vacated, so...
No, I don't understand that, but... Right. So you haven't had a conversation with your landlord about what...
I did, actually, this week.
And what did they say?
He said, absolutely, as long as I leave it in good standing, yes, I will.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you, Sandra. Okay, hearing no further questions, I'd like to ask the clerk to please take the vote.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
I'm a no, but it has nothing to do with you. I think this is the responsibility of the landlord, and that landlord at least should contribute to the relocation cost if this is an expense that should be borne solely by the taxpayer. So, for any other circumstances, I'm perfectly fine with what we're doing. It's just these particular circumstances leading up to vote no.
And I'm going to recuse myself for the earlier comments.
Trustee Conte.
Yes.
Trustee Hennig.
I'm going to repeat the first part of Tom's point, and that this has nothing to do with you or your business, but when, for me as a board member, when I'm going to take a vote on something, I want to be sure that I have full access to information and have time to read through it and can understand what it is I'm approving and weigh all factors. I want to support our businesses, of course, but I do want to be mindful of our rest of our village and our taxpayers. And unfortunately, we were not given this packet of information until this morning. And just based on my schedule, I was not able to give it the due diligence I would have liked to have arrived at an informed vote. And so I'm going to have to vote no.
Okay. Unfortunately, I'm going to vote yes. I think it's an absolutely right thing to do in our community. We want entrepreneurs like you and others to come to our community, and we're not unique in offering incentives to do that. Unfortunately, with my vote, it still does not carry. We need four votes. So it's failed tonight, and I feel awful about that, so I apologize to you, and we'll take it up at another time. Okay. Let's go on to the discussion of 7B, which is the Village Residential Fire Suppression Requirement.
No vote.
No vote, so.
Yeah, so.
Okay, so John.
Good evening, Village Panel President and Board of Trustees. John Page, Management Analyst. I put together this information at the request of the Village Board. We wanted to learn more about our requirement and what towns around us were doing with fire sprinklers.
Can you turn up the volume?
Not sure.
Joe, did you say turn up the volume? You can't hear it?
Can you hear it?
All right, Joe, you can't. They can't hear you back there.
Oh, is this better?
Yeah, much better.
Sure. Okay. I'll start from the beginning. Good evening again. John Pape, Management Analyst of the Village. I put this information together in concert with our fire staff, Chief Bowman and Marshall Wiley. Then thank you all for this information. Again, this information is put together for the Village Board on request to learn more about our sprinkler requirement as well as our monitoring requirement for fire sprinkler systems. And I preface this with saying that we're only talking this evening about residential units. That's one and two family dwelling units, not multifamily or commercial. So we go back to 2006. This is code, Village Code 3150, and this is back when the village was looking at changing up some of the village's building codes, updating some things, and with that they looked into the 13D requirement, or I'm sorry, the 13D standard as it's formally known, that's from the NFSA, and what that entails is capturing all the new residential sprinkler systems. So in 2006, what the village began to require was that residential sprinkler systems be put in to meet the 13D requirement in all new construction for a residential home, that's one and two family dwelling units again, as well as if you put an addition on your home that was resulted in more than 50% of the original square footage of your home, that new area had to be sprinkled as well. Secondly, with the monitors, in that 2016 update, the village requires that there's bells put in the home, so that alerts, again, that first level of people in the home, and then a horn strobe on the outside of the home, again, flashing a noise to alert people outside of the home that there's an emergency inside, as well as a direct connection from that home to the village's dispatch center, so that as soon as that alarm system goes off and begins to sprinkler the home, the dispatch center is alerted as well to dispatch fire personnel to that home for the emergency. When that was passed in 2006, as memos indicate, staff was asked by the village board to continue to explore further that regulation. That's how they passed it in 2006. But they took 6 months to study how that was going, do some other things in surrounding communities, and kind of make that decision. In 2006, the 13D standard was fairly new. So this was something that was just kind of beginning to take part in many Chicago suburbs. In 2008, when they looked at it, they expanded the sprinkler side of it to include renovations. So that if you renovated 50% of your home, and that's measured again by renovating 50% of the room down to the studs, then that piece of the home was also required to have sprinklers installed in it, as well as if you had a combination of a renovation and addition that equaled 50% of it. So again, to kind of summarize, right now in the village, sprinklers are required if it's a new construction for a residential home, a 50% addition, that's 50% more than the existing square footage, a 50% renovation if you're renovating more than half of your home down to the studs, or a combination of the two. And remember too that in any of those cases, it's only the new portion of the home, not the entire thing. And then again, on the alarm side, there's bells inside the home to alert residents that there's an emergency and that the alarm system's been activated. Horn strobe outside of the home, it's lights and sound, and then the direct connect to the dispatch center. So we kind of get into the why on some of those things. Again, the 13D system was put in. I'm not going to get too far into the benefits of sprinkler systems tonight, but the fire department can certainly answer any of those questions that you guys have, if that's some of your concerns. And again, according to the village documents, we see that a lot of those were aimed to be proactive rather than retroactive in installing those in as many residential homes as we could. And then again, you can see Chief Bowman's memo for the benefits of those 13D requirements and standards. And then the alarm side of it. Again, if the system goes off in a residential home without the alarm, the direct connect as we know it today, then it's possible for the system to sound and not ever alert anybody to call 911. Even though the sprinkler system is a great first line of defense, it is still important to let somebody know and make sure that we get the fire department out there to further address those issues. Since the village does have a requirement for direct connect from the residential home to the emergency dispatch center, in this case it's WSCDC, or Suburban Consolidated Dispatch Center. WSCDC has that agreement with Alarm Detection Services, otherwise known as ADS. And what that agreement says is in exchange for ADS providing WSCDC with all the equipment necessary to receive those signals direct from each of those homes, they will in turn charge a user fee, a subscription fee to those residential homes. That contract began in 2002. It's a 10-year contract and has since had 1-year extensions on it. The current price for a resident to be connected through that service is $62 a month.
How much?
$62 a month. At this time, the village staff is already in the midst of preparing to bring forward further code updates, again, across the board, not just related to these issues, but just in general as we update our codes from the current 2003 standards. And some of those updates relate to both of these things. So first, on the monitoring side, one of the requirements that we've considered changing is instead of requiring that a home be directly connected from that system to the dispatch center, instead requiring that it be connected to any central station alarm monitoring center. So one of those benefits would be the fact that then the resident could, instead of having to go with the contract with ADS, they can use any service, ADT, for security, anybody that can provide 24/7 electronic monitoring in the system. That does add another link in the chain. Rather than that signal going directly from the home to dispatch, and instead goes to that central station board, that central station board in turn calls dispatch. However, with modern technology, either of those stations and dispatch, we think that can be bridged pretty well and you know, without too much friction. Secondly, on the sprinkler side, one of the revisions that staff's looked into to providing for the residential sprinkler is trying to change the percentage threshold to some type of a graduated scale. Right now it's 50% on the addition and renovation for all homes, regardless of size. And you can kind of see how that can create some inconsistencies depending on if your home's 2,000 square feet or 7,000 square feet. So that's one of the things that we've looked into, trying to propose some type of a percentage scale so that at one side it's not disproportionately, not imposing an additional burden to somebody with a small home that's doing a modest addition, but at the same time not allowing a large addition to be built without that protection. On the legal side of things, those attorneys have been filled in on the discussion tonight and wants to make clear that we're in good legal standing as we are with the requirements we have, and at the same time the village board is in good standing to repeal any of the statutes as they are now, or to make them stricter as some communities have, without any future liability for either of those moves. I'll kind of turn to the page in the memo that describes some of the surrounding and comparable communities requirements. Again, for the village of River Forest, it's new construction plus 50% addition and renovation. One of the distinctions I want to make is in some of those you'll see demolition. That's a requirement that instead of a renovation of a room down to the studs, it actually requires the removal of the structure down to the foundation. So that's just a distinction I wanted to make. Otherwise, you can kind of see the rest of that information there. Again, just presenting this information as a way of presenting the research that we've done on this information, and we're happy to answer any questions the board has and take direction for further research.
Jen, because I wasn't sure reading the material, if I'm adding an addition and redoing my kitchen, so basically taking out new cabinets and everything else, and that equals those two rooms combined equal 50% of the house, does that get me under the threshold even though I'm just tearing down walls in the kitchen or anything else?
So the...
I guess I don't know what remodeling means.
Yeah, so the renovation standard is if for a single room, if you're renovating or if you're removing drywall down to the studs and 50% of the room, then the entire room counts. So you're just hanging kitchen cabinets, that would not meet it. You're tearing the whole kitchen out, then it would. And again, like you said, if the addition and the renovation square footage total together, then it would require for those spaces to be sprinkled.
Okay, before we ask any further questions, I'd like to see if Pete would like to come up, and because you're on here.
I'm John.
Okay, my name is John Grant, and I've lived with my family in River Forest for 11 years, 8 of those in our current house at 923 Thatcher. I'm here tonight to address the topic of fire sprinkler mandates. Specifically, I'm asking the Board of Trustees to completely remove any mandates which would force homeowners to install fire sprinklers in existing 1 and 2 family residential buildings, essentially just as the Village of Oak Park has done. Furthermore, I also ask the board to remove the requirement for central station monitoring on any fire sprinkler systems which have been or will be installed. I have submitted to the board a petition that was signed by over 100 residents who support my requests. And tonight, I'm joined by a small contingent, small but hearty contingent. Didn't realize how hard it was to get people off the couch. Who've come here to show support for reviewing and removing the mandates. My position is that these rules place a heavy financial and logistical burden on residents. And while I understand and appreciate the goal of safety, it's clear from the research that I've done that smoke detectors and other safety rules and procedures are more appropriate and reasonable than fire sprinklers for existing houses. It is also abundantly clear that a requirement for residents to pay for central station monitoring is overly intrusive and should also be eliminated. I'm refraining here from getting into lots of mechanical details or technical details discovered during my research on this issue, but I'm glad to share any information I've discovered with the board or other village residents if asked at this meeting or elsewhere. After having thoroughly discussed this issue in detail with all of the board members and many residents, it's clear to me that there's a wide understanding of and support for my request. And so I'm asking the board to move forward expeditiously with this review and revision. I originally contacted President Adusi through the village website on July 20 and the other six trustees on July 25. During the 8 or so weeks since then, the village staff has compiled and submitted a report Jonathan basically just gave you. Great job, by the way. With history and analysis of the fire sprinkler requirements in River Forest, and many trustees have done their own research. At this point in time, after 8 weeks of discovery, let's get the ball rolling on new legislation that removes these unpopular and unnecessary mandates. I want to impress upon the trustees that time is of the essence. The addition and renovations at our house are well underway, and I know many other residents who are moving forward with their projects as well, and we would all like to do so without fire sprinklers hanging over our heads. And finally, I want to thank all the board members very much for all of your time working, talking to me about this, and for all of the other work that you do in the village, and I've discovered that that's a lot. And I also want to thank my fellow residents who have supported me on this.
John, one of the things in the email that you sent to all of us, I think, was you were challenging the numbers of the cost of sprinkler systems from what the chief provided us. And maybe both of you can talk to us, but is there apples and oranges here? I don't really understand the disparity in price.
What he said in his memorandum was that I think the cost was 1% to 2%. I don't have it right in front of me.
One to 2% of total construction.
So if my, what I emailed you guys on Friday is that if my project, let's say my project's about $200,000, I haven't nailed an exact number, but that's approximate. So 1% to 2% of that would be, what, $2,000 to $4,000? But I have quotes here for $9,000 and $8,200.
Is there something unique about your house that would explain this? I was just trying to figure out the disparity, because I remember it was a big number.
Not that I know of. I mean, I sent my plans to these guys, and I had one guy come out and look at the house, but mostly people, you just send them the plans and they give you a bid.
And I, when we talked, I had the impression that you were going to have to sprinkle. Now, maybe it was just misunderstood you. I thought you had to sprinkle the whole house. Is it just the renovation and the addition?
Well, I mean, that's one of the, I think that's one of the problematic parts of the rules as they are written right now, is that according to several of the fire sprinkler companies that I spoke with, including people who have done work in the village, if you are sprinkling one part of a structure, you're supposed to do the whole thing. I haven't read through 13D, and I haven't.
Will they not warrant the work if you don't do the whole house? I mean, what?
Well, what this gentleman said to me was that he wouldn't do it because, let's say, I have a fire in my house, and you know, let's say there's a sprinkler part, let's say the kitchen or something, but the living room in front we didn't touch is not sprinkler, and whatever say the State Farm or whoever is insuring the house, then sues, you know. Basically,
so
State Farm would then sue his insurance. And that basically the argument would be that the 13D rule says, part of the argument would be that the 13D rule says that you're supposed to sprinkle the whole structure, and they didn't do that, so then that would be a liability that they just don't want to take on. So definitely a good number of the people that I contacted said they would not take the job if they were sprinkling part of it.
Were there any ones that you contacted that said they would?
Yes.
And they're the that's the $9,000 quote, or is the whole
house? No, that guy, I didn't bring that because it's lower, of course, but that was like $6,500 or $6,700.
Okay.
And that, I emailed him and I asked him about that. He didn't seem to have an answer that. When he answered me about like whether I had to do the whole house, it didn't appear exceptionally well researched. So I didn't have confidence that he was sure that, you know, that was a legit way to do it. But it is less money. But it's still it's still well over the 1-2%.
It's still complicated.
And it's complicated.
Exactly. Well, first of all, John, thank you, not only for being here and all your fans, but you know, and bringing this issue to our attention. It's not something that I think some of us, I know Susan and I in the past, have talked about it years ago, saying something just doesn't seem right, you know. So I'm happy that you brought it back to our attention and to really kind of, you know, I don't want to say fix it, but to get it right, I guess. And I, as I've said to you, and I will say to my fellow board members, I am in favor, and I'm aware of, you know, the good advantages that sprinkler systems can do for our community, and I understand, you know, how homes are being built, and you know, and what they're being built with,
and the contents.
I understand all of that, but I think we as homeowners understand that too, and so. For us to, you know, push you to put sprinkler systems in your home, or you know, insist that we do that, I just think that's an overreach on our part. It's something that you ought to make a decision on if you think it's appropriate to put sprinklers in your home. You know, if it's, you know, 50% or more. Now, new ones, a new construction, I'll say I'm a little bit ambivalent about that. A new single home construction. But I certainly think that, you know, new condos, multi-family homes, any of those should certainly have sprinkler systems in. So I've worked this through, and certainly ADS and, you know, the provider, I think they're a very good provider, but I don't know, it's like someone call 911 for police help, right? You have to call 911 anyway, right? And then 911 calls the police. So in this case, you know, I use a security, and my call center calls the fire place right away, and so they come pretty quick. I just never could rationalize, if you will, you know, this direct connect situation. So I guess I'm not in favor at all, in my opinion, to have this. I just don't see the advantage, you know, the complete advantage. But those are my opinions. I'll open it up to the rest of the trustees. But I think, you know, in short, I think you brought a good point to us. You know, a homeowner trying to make their home nicer and spend, you know, significant money to improve it, you shouldn't, you know, add another $6,000 to $10,000 of additional expenses that you don't feel you're getting value for. So that's my 2 cents.
Any other comments from the trustees?
I'll say real quick, I think that the administration's observation that it could be changed, the monitoring system should be changed, is a good one. You made a point earlier that, I think in one of your writing, that a small homeowner is given a harder time and penalized. And so that makes a lot of sense. It's a little subjective, perhaps, measuring 50% and what's included and what's not included. So I think when you create the new ordinance, we're going to keep all of those things in mind. Make sure that it's clear that the residents understand exactly what to do or not to do. I am, like I said, more inclined to support the new construction and be kind of open about what's going on with the renovations and whatnot. So hopefully we as a board and we'll come up with the correct answer to that.
I think part of the reason why maybe Oak Park and Elmwood Park and others didn't try to use some equation. They just used the demolition rule, as Jonathan was saying, is because the equation is just problematic, sort of on its face, you know. I mean, I had Patty over to look at the construction that I was doing, and I was pointing out how, you know, when you go for plans, you know, Jonathan's saying correctly that certain rooms get counted if 50% or more of the drywall is taken off the studs. And so there definitely are rooms where on the plans, that's not happening. But then when you start construction, you know, you realize, oh, well, the chimney has to come up, but I can't get it out until I open that wall or stuff like that. So there's definitely problems with enforcement. There's also problems just with figuring out, you know, what the 50% is. And then there's obviously problems with fairness as well. So there's just so many problems with those equations. So the idea also that the staff would somehow come up with a new and improved equation, it doesn't, the equation just, I don't think it's going to work. And I think that's why Oak Park, Elmwood Park, the other guys aren't doing it. And the reason they have the 50% demolition rule is because it basically, once they put this in effect for new construction, then you have certain builders who are essentially doing new construction, but they're leaving one or two walls up, so that it sort of technically qualifies as a rehab, although it's new construction. So the reason for the 50% demolition rule is to essentially not allow that to happen, to you know, make those guys, you know, follow the new construction rules, and that's basically what they're doing.
Much to the chagrin of our fire people, I'm not a big fan of sprinklers. My personal experience with the sprinklers is from a commercial aspect. For those of you that don't know, I work for an elevator company. They expect sprinklers in the shafts and in the machine rooms. The machine rooms are filled with electronics and oil. Neither one of them play well with water. But there's sprinklers there. That's just my personal experience with the sprinklers. What no one has talked about is smoke damage is one thing. Hundreds of thousands of gallons being pumped into someone's house because a sprinkler went off, that's another. I have a problem with that. I have a problem with guaranteed damage to the house because the sprinklers went off versus smoke detectors going off and stinking up the house, and you gotta get rid of the smell. The chief will probably argue this point with me, I wouldn't expect otherwise, but it's a lot easier to clean up smell than it is to tear out everything that is now mush because there's water all over it. I think to go into a commercial is a different set of standards. People rent in a commercial property, they expect different standards. And we as a board would expect different standards to that, because it's a landlord versus tenant or a condominium association. We're talking about some people might have a different level of safety need versus their neighbor. So it would be okay to err toward the safest possible thing. I used to joke when Trustee Dudek used to call me a libertarian, I had to look it up. I guess in this case, what libertarian would be is this table not telling you people you have to spend $744 a year to buy an alarm system, alarm setup that we've contracted with, or the idea that we tell you that you have to put a safety system in your house that there's a lot of cars on the market. Some of them have more safety features than others. What's next? Does the village board then jump into and say, well, everybody has to buy a Volvo because it's the safest car on the road, at least that's what their advertisements say. So, you know, I'm uncomfortable with that kind of government interference, and I use the word interference, in my opinion, appropriately. My thoughts are, if you want to make your houses as safe as possible, that's your choice, it's your house. I'm uncomfortable that back in the 2000s, this board that we now represent
you know, a decade later, is telling people what they have to do to their house for their own personal safety. I put an addition on my house that was considerable 15 years ago. The State Farm told me, okay, you're putting this nice addition on, we are requiring you to do full-blown out burglar and fire and carbon monoxide electronic systems, or we won't insure your home anymore. It's a different story. That's their company policy. I wanted State Farm, so we went ahead and did that. It's nowhere near as much as what, and honestly, if a smoke detector malfunctions, it doesn't do $1,000 damage to my ceiling and walls and everything else. So the water damage, in my opinion, has not been addressed, and I guess we have had incidences where frozen pipes became an issue. We have a lot of people in town that leave town for the winter. Is it a dry system? Is it a wet system? You know, what's the village going to require if someone goes out of town for a month, they lose the heat? They're going to come home, as soon as that pipe thaws again, they're going to come home to a basement full of water. Or the sensor's going to go off that says that the water sensor, you know, says that it went off. That's not going to go off until that pipe thaws. So,
yeah, but that would be there.
Yeah, I mean, part like the difference between the other difference between new construction and existing is you could make an argument in new construction that you're protecting the consumer and you know you're preventing the business person from cutting corners, which business people do sometimes. But in the case of an existing house, you're essentially protecting me from myself. Which is,
you don't have to buy the new house that doesn't have sprinklers.
Right, that's
right.
True.
I agree. So, Patty, do you have a comment?
You want to go first, go ahead.
A question and some comment. Mostly, a lot of the comments that were stated, I do feel I agree with. I know when I was doing some of my research and looking into this, in terms of some of the water damage, my understanding that technology has improved. Maybe you notice that it seems it's not that sprinklers go out through the whole house. So, as far as the new construction, but it isn't like in the movies where the whole thing is going to go off. It is wherever the heat source is coming in that particular sprinkler will go off. I have a question in terms of the monitoring. So if there's an alarm that the sprinkler has gone off and the homeowner's not home, what does the fire department do?
We will... We will we'll come to the scene and we will go through, you know, go around the house, try to gain entry. If nobody's home, we may force entry depending on what we see. If it's a sprinkler, we probably will, just so that, you know, so we can shut it off if something's gone off.
Does this monitoring allow for the monitoring company to know where in the house the sprinkler is? No. So it's not like you could problem is. So it's in fact possible if you weren't able to force yourself in or decide you weren't going to force in, that the water could continue without the homeowner.
It's possible. Generally, when a sprinkler head goes off, in residential, it's only about 10 to 15 gallons a minute, though. It's not...
I got you. I knew what you said.
It's almost in my head.
Why don't you just go to the podium?
Yeah, right. Just...
Hurry
up. It's joking. And I was going to ask you something.
Okay. Generally, residential sprinkler heads, they only go off when they get the heat. At the most, you'll get one, sometimes two, depending on how far the fire progresses, before the fire department gets there. Sprinkler heads themselves will only give out 10 to 15 gallons per minute at the time. It's not like 100 gallons per minute like our nozzles are, so it's actually a lot less water damage than if we have to turn on the hose. It also suppresses what smoke is coming from whatever heat source caused that.
which suppresses the smoke, causes less smoke damage. As far as the monitoring, I agree, our monitoring may be a little bit forward. It's a lot more aggressive than most other towns. And that's one of the reasons we're looking at it for the code amendments when we update the codes. But I would like to remind you that right now, since we put the 13D into our codes, we've been ahead of the curve. Okay? And I feel it's important that we stay ahead of the curve and not fall behind the curve. And if we scale those back too much, we're going to fall behind the curve.
Chief, good question. What about the argument that John made that sprinkler installers won't install and remodel unless they're doing the whole house?
As far as I know, we have not had the issue brought up to us, and we currently have 145 houses in town that have sprinklers.
Have any of them gone off?
To my knowledge, no. We have not had any that have gone off due to a fire.
Or malfunction.
Accidents typically are very rare, and it's usually for due to an installation failure. Occasionally there is something where the pipes freeze, but
No, I was curious, we had a fire.
Can I interject here? When I spoke to John, I'm sorry, but just that on this point, when I spoke to John, I think when he said that the churn carriers are horrible, wouldn't do the job, it was because we were only requiring the work to be done in the addition part or the new part, correct? So it could have been the same room, but we were only requiring whatever the part of the room we were adding in to. No?
Well, probably any room that's included has to be like the whole room. Okay. But certain rooms, it's only rooms that are included in the new construction.
So it wouldn't be the whole house then?
Wouldn't be the whole house. No. But if you're going to do a room, then it's the whole room.
Right. But it wouldn't be just the. If I took a room and I was only fixing a part of the room, a half the room, they were saying you got to do the whole room.
Oh, no, then you wouldn't.
Well, they were saying you have to do the whole house. They were saying you won't do the work.
I don't know who they is. The sprinkler companies or
the sprinkler companies.
The sprinkler companies, the ones I talked to, would prefer to do the whole thing. And right. I was, frankly, if I have to do it, I'm going to do the whole thing. Like, if I had to do it, I would do the whole thing. It doesn't make a lot of sense to do some of it.
Okay.
Thanks.
That's what I was trying to do.
Thanks, John. Yeah, that's good clarity.
Honestly, if we had our choice, we would prefer that the whole house get done too. But in the interest of
residents,
we've limited it to 50%.
But if that doesn't comply with the law, it's a liability issue. Then it's a problem.
Do you want me to speak to the curtain?
Yeah.
Yes, please. The 13D standard by the NFPA is...
Yeah, speak louder, John.
The 13D standard relates to how new sprinklers are installed, and it's mostly related to new construction in residential homes. River Forest has an amendment to its building code to require that 50% additions or renovations have sprinklers installed to 13D standards. So to answer that question, the installation and the 13D requirement is how and where and how many and how many gallons and all those things. Am I missing anything, Kevin, of how those all get installed?
Correct.
So again, to answer that question, it's our amendment that we require those things to be in renovations and additions, and obviously they're installed and inspected as we require.
All right.
I have one more thing. Since 2015, we've had 7 fires in town in 1 or 2 family dwellings that amounted to approximately $600,000 in damage and 1 fatality. None of those were sprinklered, and that's a huge difference. You know, it probably would have been less than $50,000 in damage and no fatalities with sprinklers in those homes.
John, do you have any data on any homes that had sprinklers and whether those people were saved?
I can tell you nationally, I don't want to say there's been no deaths where there's been sprinklers, because I believe there's been a couple, but there hasn't been any. It's well over 99.9%.
But you're saying in River Forest, asking for Trustee Gibbs' question, is there any fires using sprinklers?
Since 2015, no. We have not had any single-family residences that had sprinklers.
No, but do you know, since the ordinance has been enacted, has there been any?
I don't have that data currently, or data from
before. I thought you'd mentioned to me that there was one.
Well, there was one, but it was not single-family residence. It was multifamily.
Okay. Thanks, Kurt. All right, well, I think for the sake of time here, unless there's any other compelling information we want to give. So the process is that we had our discussion and your input, and it seems like the consensus, I think you put it, the consensus, and this is our takeaway for tonight, so we can create an amendment or advised ordinance to our current one, and that is to remove the monitoring, the no monitoring, the ADS, right? Yes. To remove no sprinklers for the renovation, 50% renovation or addition on the home, but keep all the requirement for sprinklers for any new single family, as well as any multi family and or commercial property that's built in River Forest. That seems to be what I'm hearing. John, you're looking at me with Am I talking about the right subject?
Yeah, no, yeah.
I just make one clarification, because I would still think if you're going to put sprinklers in your construction, you'd want it at monitor. You'd want to have, not necessarily the person that we designate as the monitor, but you would want to have some
central station. Great. Thank you for correcting. Yeah, I meant no central, like you can only pick one vendor.
But you mean direct connect?
Correct.
So central station means anything, ADT, Forest, whoever you want to do.
If that's possible. I thought it was not possible, but right. It is.
So the idea would be you would still have monitoring, you just wouldn't be required to use ADS.
ADS.
You could use an
ADS. John,
step to the podium, you can see what I did. I want to make sure we grabbed your...
Well, on Jonathan's chart that he made with all the different villages on it, I believe Glencoe was the one
that's found.
I mean, I'd like to call Glencoe and find out the details of that, because, I mean, when I talked to these fire sprinkler companies, according to them, nobody was installing them. One gentleman told me that he knew that Naperville is requiring it, but they don't require sprinklers in single-family homes, so that was only for multi-unit. I'm talking about central station monitoring. And the only other town that any of these fire sprinkler people could think of was, I think, Highland Park, and the only reason that they had some monitoring there maybe required, well, that was on huge houses, so essentially, and that was driven by insurance, so basically, if your house is like 10,000 square feet, then you can't insure it without sprinklers, because it's just too big.
So
besides those two,
if you have a 20,000 square feet to retrofit sprinklers, or if you're going
new construction.
Yeah, well,
I'm assuming.
Agree. If you're going to build a new single family home that's large, then you ought to have sprinklers.
So basically, what I'm saying is, there, from all these fire companies that I talked to, which was plenty, they couldn't name any towns outside of those two examples, and those aren't even good examples of anybody that requires this monitoring. I don't know why. I didn't get into the whole theory behind it, but that's the case.
All right. Okay, John. I think we captured the right consensus, with the exception of maybe multi-monitoring systems, meaning we could use
anyone,
not a single. It's not,
right. Not direct. So you can use central station.
Right. Gotcha. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to write all the... I heard consensus, but I don't hear anybody.
Yep.
For the modern, yeah. All right. Are we okay? Yeah, I got them all. They don't have to speak up. So it's all good, John. So what we're going to do is we've got consensus here. We're going to write it up in an ordinance and an amendment.
and then we'll come back probably unfortunately, our next board meeting is October 15th. So, I don't know, again, I don't know how that dovetails into your construction, but that would be the next.
Just to clarify for me, are we changing the monitoring or is it regarding what's appropriate to be sprinkling and not sprinkling?
I think
both.
Yeah, we have to amend the estimate.
So what's been discussed, the consensus is that the monitoring will remain, but you don't have to have direct connect. You could use
resident choice.
Right, resident choice. And that there would be no requirement for sprinklers for renovation or additions, but there would still be requirement for sprinklers for new single-family construction and then multifamily and commercial.
And I think I'd also like to see for the demolition concept, because it does, you know, I mean, like, it seems the big thing in doing new construction is you tear down everything but one wall so you can call it a rehab. So I don't know, just want to allow, if we're going to say new construction should be sprinklered, mm-hmm. something where you're demolishing substantial of the building, but leaving a wall.
So what you're talking about is people getting around
avoiding the sprinklers.
By leaving a wall up. Okay. Well, I understand the intent. We can work with the attorney to figure it out.
I actually have a clarification on the monitoring. So we're saying not the current that we have leading it to the homeowner.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're making the requirement that they have to have it monitored, or are we going to leave it to them to determine themselves if they want to have it monitored?
It would still be monitored, but it wouldn't have to be monitored through the village's direct connect. You could use any provider to do that.
I think that's John, and John, you would agree, you need a monitoring system.
No, I don't think so. No, what I'm saying is that nobody in the state requires this. River Forest would be the only town.
You're saying even on a sprinkler?
Correct.
Well,
I don't know why. I'm not saying I understand the reason.
On our survey that was put in together with 12 municipalities, including River Forest, 10 don't require the monitoring requirement. And the other one is Glencoe, and I think that's what John has called. But is there a reason why we're going to be still requiring a monitoring requirement when the other villages don't?
Just to be clear, there are other communities, Glencoe is one of them.
Yep.
There are others in the state that require central station monitoring. We can provide those to you. What all residential sprinkler systems have in common is that they have a water flow bell system. So if the system goes off, there is an alarm in the home that activates. What most of them have is an audible horn, strobe alarm outside the structure. So if the system activates, there's a horn and strobe going on outside to alert possibly a neighbor or another passerby of the system.
I appreciate that, John, but my question is, why do the other 10 villages don't require that, if all that still applies?
Yeah, you're right. The last step is alerting 911. The services automatically, so that if nobody's home, if the neighbors don't see the strobe alarm or things like that, then in those other communities where they don't require central station monitoring, it is possible that the system's activated and 911's not contacted.
There's a lot that that don't require it, but they have.
Excuse me, I helped John. I'm Kevin Miley, the fire marshal. I helped John with a lot of the research. A lot of the towns that had it did not have a requirement to have it monitored, but a lot of them do. A lot of the residents do have a monitoring system, either to a security system or to a direct fire alarm system itself. So it is, and we told them that a few said that no, we don't have a requirement, but we do have a lot of them that are monitored.
And I guess my question to this body here is if that's the same, why don't we leave it up to the people to decide?
My opinion is that if it's really a protection to the homeowner in terms of further damage, I mean, I feel if a home has just smoke alarms, right, and there's fire and there's nobody there, they're not being, you know, the fire department's not being notified unless they happen to have a system that's connected to the fire department to have that notification, right? And so it seems we're deciding that the homeowner wants this insurance to have the fire department be able to come out if it goes off when they're not home, and it seems it should be their decision instead of making them pay a monthly fee for that protection.
Yeah, I don't think that's an issue. Just to be clear, there's no requirement. But if the resident wants to use a monitoring system, they will use one of their choices. I'm fine with that. No issues.
Anybody else have any issues?
Okay. All right, very good. So that's what we're going to do. We'll probably vote on it in October, or October 15th. Okay, with all of that said, this is the no executive session, so we need to adjourn and get into our next meeting if I can get.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. All right, we're going to maybe just give us about a couple minutes to regroup and then we'll start our.